Phil Buzz Rothfield coming up shortly. It is Monday, March 27, and yesterday we saw in the AFL the Swans beat Hawthorn, destroyed them. 81 points at the SCG. GWS, though, they went down to the West Coast Eagles by 19 points in Perth last night. Yesterday in the footy, the Warriors 16-14 over the Dogs, the Sharks 40-8 over the Dragons. And we saw the Knights win their second game of the season, 24-14 against the Raiders. The Raiders led 14-8 at halftime. Three tries in 6 minutes early in the second half turned the match. Winger Greg Marzu had a double. Jack Whiten on report twice, sin-binned in the 48th minute after that hit on Jackson Hastings in the act of kicking. And he also hit Lockie Miller high. So that could be an issue for Jack Whiten. And just on the Knights as well, so the club revealed that Kalyn Pong has gone to Vancouver. He left on Friday to get further assessments, and it involves technology not yet available in Australia. So why wouldn't you? As we saw Manly do with Tom Dvorovic, Souths do with Latrell Mitchell, they've invested heavily in Kalyn Ponga. Why not spend the money to go and get the best possible treatment and assessments available?
Well, treatment and advice on, you know, how his brain is looking and what they can do to help him into the future. But, you know, we know that Kalyn's a wonderful footy player. They've invested in him. He's the future of the club, and they want to make sure that they're looking after him as best they possibly can. But more importantly, I suppose, for Knights supporters, is they want to make sure that he's okay and then get on the field as quickly as he possibly can, and hopefully he'll have a run where he doesn't receive any more head knocks, because it has to be a concern. When you've played the game for a limited amount of time and you've received so many head knocks, and we know that the league are doing all they can to protect the players, and in fact, they're protecting the players from themselves. So well done to the Knights and Kalyn for getting on the front foot to go over there to have that assessment, and hopefully it's all good news and Kalyn can come back and reach the potential he's always shown as a footy player. But again, you know, a lot of work around concussion has been done, and there's still plenty more work to be done. We are still unsure of what the outcomes will be, but I think the game is heading in the right direction. Players are now more aware of head knocks and the issues that they may face into the future, and the game's trying to protect them from themselves at times.
Morning, Buzz.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Another great weekend of rugby league, wasn't it? Hey, fantastic games. I think yesterday at Cogger was one of the few blowouts we've seen, and sadly Anthony Griffin fighting for his career at St George Illawarra was on the wrong end of the scoreboard. And I look at the weekend as really a tale of two coaches, and I'm talking about Adam O'Brien and Griffin, who I think were under an equal amount of pressure to save their jobs going into the season. And what the Knights did yesterday against the Raiders, what the Knights did, a couple of that unbelievably courageous win over the West Tigers the day Ponga went off early. I think you can see a football team in Newcastle that are dead set playing for their coach, and no Ponga, they're $1.5 million superstar, but they're still getting the job done. And then you go to Anthony Griffin and you look at the last 2 weeks against the Broncos and Cronulla. They've conceded 80 points in two games. And look, I've got to be highly critical, and I've heard you talk about it, Clarkey, of the St George Illawarra management for allowing it to be known last week and so early in the season that they're already about to start interviewing other coaches for the job. Why I say that, I've looked at the St George Illawarra draw for the next 6 weeks. And if they can play like we know they can, they've got the Dolphins next week without Sean O'Sullivan and without Kafusi, arguably up there with their two best players. They've then got the Titans, the Raiders, Anzac Day against the Roosters, but then the Bulldogs and the West Tigers. So there's five winnable games in the next 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And for the life of me, guys, I cannot understand why they had to bring it up so early or leak it to the media that they were talking to other coaches already. I think Anthony Griffin deserved more time. this package of matches coming up in the next 6 weeks to prove whether or not he deserves to be coaching that side for the more than the end of this year.
How does it end then, Buzz? Because, yeah, I think we've, you know, on the text line, we've probably received both sides. Some people saying what you and I are saying. Some people saying, well, you know, it was going to happen anyway. But how does it end? Does it... Is his position untenable now? Can he finish the season? And just looking at the performance on the weekend from the Dragons, oh, man, I just feel like it's going to be more pain for coach, captain, and all players and club if it continues like this.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. So George Illawarra is saying they need to make a decision and need to make it quickly to allow potential recruits, and even though they've signed those two good front rowers from Manly already who are going to come across this year, they think that new recruits and players they're trying to keep want to know who's coaching next year. But you look at the way Phil Gould handled the Canterbury situation. When Trent Barrett left, he put in a caretaker, Mick Potter. Mm. He was in absolutely no rush to lock down Cameron Serraldo for next year's recruits or to keep the players he's currently got. And he waited way deep into the season after the West Tigers had had a crack at Serraldo and a few other clubs and then made his call. I think they're being... As much as Griffin hasn't got the results, as I said, I think he's entitled to get through the next 4 or 5 weeks before a decision is made. And look, that's just my thoughts.
What have you made of the defection of Joseph Swali'i back to rugby union at the end of 2024, Buzz?
Good luck to Joseph. An enormous amount of money, $1.6 million. But as I've pointed out in my column today, for every Wendell Saylor, Matt Rogers and Israel Folau, who have been smash hit success stories in rugby union, there's been a Sam Burgess, there's been a Benji Marshall and a Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. Now, with Joseph, he's 19 years of age. He's obviously an outstanding prospect and he's a really decent young man. But I think rugby union have got a massive identity crisis. And I challenge you guys, if you saw three quarters of that side walk down George Street, the current, what would you know who they are? Would you have any idea?
Oh, only a couple of them. Probably not.
A couple out of how many? 30, the Wallaby squad?
Yeah.
Clarkie, would you know any apart from Michael Hooper?
I'd know a handful. But no, I'm agreeing with what you're saying.
Yeah, well that's what I'm saying. Yeah. They've done this as a trophy signing.
Yeah.
In the old days, they had the Ella Brothers, Eels, Campese, George Gregan, Tim Horan, Michael Liner, just so many superstars. Right now, they have none. Their game's struggling. Their pathways are struggling. They've allowed so many great kids to come to rugby league. Now, there are players in the Wallabies currently playing and about to go to the World Cup who are not who don't have their future sorted and don't like seeing this sort of money thrown around when they're not getting looked after themselves. And you look at young Max Jorgensen, 18 years of age, an absolute excitement machine, a fullback. Is Joseph Swali'i going to come to rugby and want to play in the wing for $1.6 million because Jorgensen's so good? Or has he been guaranteed fullback and is Jorgensen going to leave? Now, so many players in international rugby, and I mentioned McCollum today, left Australia to play for Scotland and Ireland because of the opportunities there, which is a real shame. And then you look at Joseph's position in rugby league, and I rated all the fullbacks in league. And I've got him behind Tedesco, Turbo, Luttrell, Dylan Edwards, Ryan Pappenhausen, maybe even Reece Walsh. I don't think he can make the origin side ahead of other centres, Turbo, Mitchell, Jack White and Campbell Graham, Katoni Staggs. So what this whole story, when they're paying $1.6 million for a young fella who's, you know, not elite in rugby league yet and still has a way to go, very, very exciting prospect, I think it shows the desperation of rugby union. That's my view anyway.
Do you think he should be allowed to play State of Origin, Buzz?
No, I don't. I don't. Look, Laurie, I think... And look, I can understand the Roosters for the next 18 months are going to be developing a player. And you know the development, Laurie and Clarkie, from 19 to 21 is a really, really important rugby league player. And Trent Robinson's going to use his new, flash new facility to turn Joseph into to do it for rugby union. But I can understand they're backing him because they're more chance of winning a competition with Joseph in the side. But if I was Brad Fittler, I wouldn't pick him for Origin. But as I explained in the column this morning, I wouldn't pick him on the bench. I think Nicho Hynes has got to be on the bench, or Jack Whiten will be on the bench. So, look, I don't think it's really an argument we need to have at this stage, because even on the wing, they blundered badly by not picking out O'Carr last year. And there's also Daniel Tupu. There's also Brian Toho. So I don't think it's going to be a problem that Freddie will actually need him. Would I put him in as a development player? Definitely not, because why should we develop a player who is not committed long-term to rugby league? That's just my view.
Okay.
Your thoughts?
Well, I can understand Freddie picking him. And if I'm in Freddie's position, I'm picking him. I'm not worried about the fact that he's in the system and he's going to rugby union. My job as a State of Origin coach would be to pick the best side available. And I think that if he's available and he's playing well enough, Freddie's entitled to pick him. And if I'm in Freddie's position, I'm picking him as well.
But where do you pick him ahead of, Lowie?
That's the thing. You've got to oust Toho and Ado Carr first of all, and I think he'd be probably next in line after that with, say, a Tupu.
He'd be close.
Yeah.
Were you saying, Midder?
I was going to get to Luke Brooks, but I just think it's a bit salty if you don't pick him, if he's unavailable for Origin. If he's not considered for Origin just because he's signed with rugby, I think that's salty. But anyway, we can have... The amount of players that leagues pinch from union in recent years is enormous. And it's due to the lack of opportunities, I know, particularly as they just come out of school and rugby's been an issue, a huge issue for rugby. But for someone to go the other way and all of a sudden for league to kick up a stink is honestly ridiculous.
Anyway, I with the current players available, I can't see him making the Origin side anyway.
Yeah. And that's fair enough. Luke Brooks and the Tigers. Where are we at here, Buzz? Because it doesn't appear to be working at the moment.
Do you agree this is a sad story, seeing a player like Luke Brooks struggling as badly as he is? And look, I think he needs to get out of the West Tigers. I've said that for a long period of time. He's on a 14-game losing sequence. And every player in the NRL who has played more than 150 games, that's the longest losing sequence. He has an overall win percentage of just 37% since he's been at the West Tigers, and all that time, 193 matches, he's never been able to steer them into the finals. I think he wanted to go at the end of last year to Newcastle, but Tim Sheen saw something in him that a lot of us can't and decided to keep him here. I think the performance against Melbourne showed that that was probably a mistake. I've mentioned McCollum today. There are a couple of other struggling halves in recent years, like Chad Townsend at Cronulla. He lost his halfback jersey. And Tom Dearden at the Broncos. They'll give him a fresh opportunity, a fresh start at the Cowboys, and it just did them the world of good to get into a new system, new surroundings, new teammates, new coach. And Luke Brooks is 28. He's got another 5 years to go. Just cut him loose. Give him... Look, and I can understand... They're paying him $1 million a year. And, Laurie, I've rated all the halves today, and on what I've seen the last couple of years, I couldn't put him higher than 18.
Well, I can't disagree with you, Buzz, in everything you've just said, Dan. I like Luke Brooks, but it's just not working. It's just not working. I think he'd do well at another club, with the right people around him. But unfortunately, he's been at the Tigers for a long period of time and he just hasn't fulfilled that potential that we all saw, but we haven't got to see enough of.
I think he's playing the wrong position. I know he can't get there now with Appy there, but I think he's 9 or 14. And I think if he goes to another club, I think he's going to play 14.
Yeah, you know what, guys? If Luke Brooks was a $350,000 battling halfback like a Clune or a Tanner Boyd or a young Jonah Pezet, we wouldn't be having this discussion. But the fact is, he's a $1 million chief playmaker. Mm. And with that comes enormous
That's
scrutiny.
Not his fault as well, though, Buzz. He doesn't.
Of course it's not, Clark.
Yeah, the club pay him the money, so maybe the club need to be responsible for maybe paying him that sort of money too early without knowing.
Well, yeah, Clarky, they paid him that sort of money because in 2018, under Ivan Cleary, he was the Dally M halfback of the year.
Exactly right. But that's the advantage of a long-term contract, right? As from a player's perspective, he gets offered a long-term deal for that sort of money. Smart negotiation by his agent. He's had a good year, but we say it regularly in sport, you know, one good season doesn't make a player.
No, true. And he just, to me, looks like a player who is feeling serious pressure and not enjoying himself. And I'd like to see him let out of the gates at Concord and restart, reboot his career somewhere else. I really would.
Mm. Now, we see a change of Premier in New South Wales, Buzz, but will that help the clubs get funding for Centre of Excellences and upgrades to their stadiums?
Yeah, Laurie, really, really good question. Chris Minns swept into power, election bloodbath, wasn't it, on Saturday night? And you know what? The grand final in Sydney, there is still no commitment to play it here. Now, Peter Volandis, in the very near future, will organise a meeting with Chris Minns to sit down and try and do a 25-year deal to keep this match in Sydney, where we all know it belongs. However, he will want not just money in return, he will want a commitment from the state government to not build new stadiums at Manly, at Leichhardt Oval and at Cronulla and even improvements at Belmont. He just wants them bought up to scratch because hundreds of thousands of fans love these venues and turn up to them every weekend of the season. They're sold out, but the facilities aren't good enough. So with Dominic Perrottet, the outgoing Premier, he would not commit to suburban grounds outside of Penrith, where the sitting member, Stuart Ayres, who was thrown out over the weekend, committed $400 million to build a brand new stadium at Penrith for one NRL side. There's no rugby team in the area. There's no A-League soccer team in the area. While all these other clubs I've just mentioned desperately need to lift their game day experiences and put in proper toilets, proper cafeterias or meals and bar areas, etc. So to keep the grand final here, Peter wants suburban ground funding. And the new Premier has the same problems Dominic Perrottet had in Lismore flood relief, teachers, nurses, etc., etc. And so it's going to be a big first test. Chris Minns is a mad rugby league fan. He loves his Canterbury Bulldogs. He lives a drop kick away from Cogra Jubilee Oval. So it's going to be a really interesting meeting. Peter Volandis normally gets what Peter Volandis wants, but he's got a tough battle on his hands here.
Buzz, been a great first month. We have to leave it there. Chat later.
Hasn't it, guys? Hasn't it been terrific?
Thanks so much, mate.
Good on you guys. Talk soon.
Okay, this WGC match play, the final between Sam Burns and Cameron Young, the two Americans, and Burns is one up through six holes in the third place playoff between Scotty Scheffler and Rory McIlroy. McIlroy is two up through seven. A couple of dramatic semi-finals earlier today, and Burns beat Scheffler after 21 holes, and it took 19 holes for Young to beat Rory McIlroy. Now, also in the MotoGP overnight, Grand Prix in Portugal, Francesco Bagnaia, the Italian on his Ducati, was victorious. Aussie Jack Miller finished seventh. And in the Euro qualifying, England, they beat the Ukraine 2-0. And in... where are these games? Yeah, 2-0. That was at Wembley. Italy have beaten Malta 2-0. Portugal beat Luxembourg 6-0. Kazakhstan beat Denmark 3-2. We've got Mossy coming on later this morning. The Socceroos beat Ecuador 3-1 Friday night. And they've got the second match of that series tomorrow night at Marvel Stadium in Melbourne. Some of the Super Rugby results over the weekend. The Waratahs went down to the Chiefs on Friday night, 24-14. The Crusaders beat a weakened Brumbies side, 35-17. The Blues beat the Force yesterday, 30-17. And the Melbourne Rebels beat the Reds, 40-34. The Rebels are going okay. But again, the Aussie sides against Kiwi sides over the weekend, 0-3. Hasn't been a great start to the season for the Aussie sides in Super Rugby outside the Brumbies, but as I said, they got beat there by the Crusaders on the weekend. Great win from the Swans yesterday, 81-point winners at the SCG. GWS unfortunately went down to the West Coast Eagles by 19 points in Perth. In Super Netball, GWS, they were just pipped by the West Coast Fever, 74-73. And as we mentioned earlier, as part of our villains, well, the Swifts in the Adelaide match in Adelaide was abandoned on the weekend after some lighting issues and also problems with the court. So that was a bit embarrassing for the league there, though. I have to get that sorted. But give us a call, 13-53-53.
You had to think about that one. What other number? Hey, what other number did you have in your head just then,
I don't know, pal. Brain's half on. It's Monday. 13:53
after an enjoyable weekend from you, youngster.
Is that right?
Apparently. Oh, I'm just going on what I've been told.
Is there? Who's telling you?
Do you want me to say on air?
No. 13:53:53. 0419-767-272. Heroes and villains, give us a call this Monday morning. $100 gift card. Case of the alcoholic kombucha up for grabs. Stacks of texts I'll get to shortly. We've got Paul on the line, though. G'day, Paul. How are you?
G'day, boys. How you going?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm a promoter for it, and this guy's been copping a lot of flack. He's my hero. It's coming Mitchell Moses, mate. He actually stepped up at the show that he can win the game for us. In the last few weeks, he's missed a few goals and a field goal against Melbourne. But he actually played really well. Hammer put a lot of pressure on his kicking game. And his defence was unreal, and he kicked all his goals, and then he kicked the winning field goal at the end of the game, so he got ahead of it to me, mate.
And, yeah, got one up after Cleary kicked that unbelievable field goal on full-time as well. So, Bo, they had some good moments there, both those halfbacks, didn't they, on Thursday night. What about your villain?
I don't want to say, Clark, I'm sorry to say, but I say Brooks, mate, only because at crucial stages of the game, he made so many mistakes, like it was up 12-6, Belmore up, and then tried to kick back. And they got down, then the Tigers last tackled, he kicks it dead, and then Melbourne scored two quick tries before half time, and then in the second half, he knocks it on twice, and then they get the ball down about 20 metres or 30 metres out from attacking the Melbourne, and he didn't put the ball in nobody's second row, and they lost the ball from that. Yeah. So, yeah. Unfortunately, I don't know what to say, I'll play one player, but at certain stages, he's made so many bad mistakes, it's really cost the Tigers. Are you reckon, Clarky?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, it's hard because in a team sport, it's never one person's fault. And I think Luke Brooks has copped a lot of criticism. But unfortunately, I think there's a number of incidents through, you know, over the last couple of years. But I just think it's for both parties, for the club and Luke Brooks. I just don't think it's working. You know, and I just said to Loz before, I still believe. I think Luke's best position is probably 9 or 14. I don't think it's a number 7 anymore.
Yeah, I couldn't argue with that. I think it's certainly not working as a 7 at the Tigers at the moment. He might just need a break from that club and go on playing a different system. But what he's doing at the moment is not, you know, good enough, and neither is the Tigers' performance. But, Paul, are you there, mate? I want to ask you a quick question. This took me by surprise because I think Gutho has been your best player certainly this year and over the last couple of years. I read with interest they're talking about signing another fullback for this year and Gutho possibly moving to other positions.
No way, mate. He played unreal on Thursday night. Those bombers he was taking on Cleary and that. And, mate, no way they should move. He's unreal, mate. His defence at the back. And he works along with the back. No way, mate. He definitely's got to stay at the back, mate, 100%.
Yeah, I'm stunned by this story.
I cannot believe that.
Unless they're signing James Tedesco or Tommy T or Latrell.
He's easily been their best player.
Mate, easily.
Easily. try savers, effort, work rate,
this can't be true, though, surely.
No, well, it is. They've confirmed that they're chasing a game breaker to join the club immediately. So I don't know who this game breaker would be.
Appreciate your call, though, Paul. Thank you. So this is an article, a story broken by Michael Chambers in the Herald and on Nine yesterday, that the club has had a meeting with Clint Gutherson to tell him they're hunting for a fullback. They want an X factor who potentially could come off the bench. So there's even, you could even say maybe Gutho gets into a role similar to like Joey Manu at the Roosters, could end up in the centres where he's played Origin. And they're just throwing this around at this stage, but they want another X factor somewhere to fit in that back line or in maybe the 14 jersey. And they've told Gutho as such, who knows, could be a fullback.
I'm all for strengthening your squad, but if you've got another fullback, if he's a genuine fullback coming to the club, you've got two number ones. Now, Gutho could play in other positions, but I don't think he's going to be as effective in those other positions as he is at fullback. So you've got him, and they're saying that they're going to target a game-breaking fullback. I'm just trying to work out who that possibly can be and what is he going to bring to the team.
Risky business.
You're captain
and best player. You're looking to fill that position?
Most consistent player. Well, he gives you, you know what you're going to get from him every week. You don't have to worry about where his level is going.
And you just signed two superstars, or you just signed two X factors as your six and seven. Yeah. Don't you actually want stability? Like, it doesn't Gutho's how he plays? Isn't that exactly what you want? Isn't that what we bragged about Penrith having?
Yeah.
The last couple of years.
And the other thing,
Dylan Edwards,
that shouldn't be.
I reckon those two are very similar.
Well, the other thing you should never overlook is the team chemistry and dynamic. With his leadership.
Yeah.
His leadership there has been very strong for Parramatta over the last couple of years. He's been able to galvanise and keep this group tight. And if you're getting your leader offside, who's a popular player, that's dangerous territory as well.
Just to emphasise, this isn't a move Gutho on story. This is we're going to try and accommodate someone else.
If you are moving Gutho's position story, it's going to be a move on story. Because it might start that way. You think the captain and Gutho, who's been their best player, he's going to be I'll go on the wing.
Yeah.
I'll play in the centres.
Unless it's Tedesco, Tommy T, Latrell. He's in the top, six fullbacks in the game?
Definitely.
So unless it's one of those coming, you're thinking, oh, geez. How's it all going to work? How's it going to unfold? And the impact it'll have on the team and the teammates, because he's such a popular figure, such a great leader for this organisation. So you're tempting fate a little bit.
Gutho's on tomorrow morning. We've got, by the way, Queanbeyan's off today. Just came through for Racing New South Wales stewards about half an hour ago. Track inspection completed following 32 mils of rain for the week, 8 mils overnight, which wasn't forecast. There's service water on the course proper, deemed unsafe for racing. So Queanbeyan today postponed. We've got Steve. G'day, Steve.
Hey, gentlemen. How we doing?
No, not too bad. Thanks, mate. Who's your hero and villain?
Well, you've just stolen me thunder again, boys. Me villain was going to be whoever at Parramatta is peddling this story about Gutho. You've just seen the first three rounds when the Moses contract was all up in the air, and there was a whole lot of angst, I think, within the playing group about all the noise and all that. They've just put that to bed. He comes out, he plays good, they win a game. And now, what other controversy can we make up? All right, let's shop Gutho around. It seems ridiculous.
Yeah, they're not shopping him around.
No, they're not shoving him around, but what it does, it creates a lot of talk. And Steve is right. You've just calmed everyone down and you've had a win, and now this one breaks. Have you guessed what the storyline all week will be leading into a tough game against the Roosters?
Maybe they like it, Barra. Maybe they like this chat. Maybe this is exactly what they're after.
They're after a bit of Melrose play.
Mate, seriously.
Boys, Penn and Teller are great magicians, but they're full of smoke and mirrors. Yeah. You can't tell me that the way that this story is broken and what's been said by the club, and as Clarkie just said, like, Gutho's not going to say, yeah, pick me on the wing this week, boys, I'm a team guy.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Put me on the bench, I'll captain from 14. Mate, that'll kill him.
18,
he's their best player.
Arthur will only can play in 18.
Yeah.
Who's here, right?
Mate, can I give an honourable mention to Isaac Moses? He's made a lot of coin in the last 7 days, hasn't he?
Yes.
That's a whole lot of coin. He's done well. Now, seriously, any Collingwood defeat's a good Collingwood defeat. So I want to give my hero to the umpires in the girls' Nessie game between Collingwood and the Vixens. No, hey, two, you know, alternate centre passes. The Vixens get two in a row. They score two goals. Collingwood get beat by a point. Great result.
Whatever makes you happy, Steve.
down here, mate, Collingwood losing's like Manly losing.
Yeah, but there's something about, and Loz, you've said it as well. I find them difficult to dislike. They're
playing a good brand of footy. They really smashed like Port Adelaide on the weekend.
Yeah, really like the coach.
Yeah.
But no, Steve, good on you. Stay loyal to disliking Collingwood, whatever you do. From Sky Racing, Ali Mosley, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Yeah, really well, thanks. As we build towards day one of the championships, let's review Saturday, though. And firstly, well, Loz's multi got up, so he's got the chest out this morning, but Roots was in his multi, and we only needed to run, what, top three, I think, Loz? Ends up winning the Emancipation. Where to now for this mare Roots, do you think, Ali?
Well, she's quite versatile, and you know, we saw her come out early days, and she's pretty dynamic over that mile trip. So I was actually just having a look to see what she's nommed for. She's nommed for Queen of the Turf Stakes. So I'd imagine that's the way she would head. It'll be a good amount of time between. So I think that would be the direction they would take her in. Particularly how well she looked. I saw her at the back of the barriers, and I thought, wow, she looks the best I've seen her. She just was absolutely peaking for that run and very, very nice win. But I was just pleased that a tissue ran second, and that was enormous. I thought she was, you know, aside from Roots, definitely the run of the race. I mean, you know, you didn't have to be a ratings expert or a sectionals expert to look at how good that run was. She came from a mile off them, missed the kick, and she finished second. And I think she ran four of the best sectionals of the race. So an enormous run from a tissue. So hopefully a few were on her a place, and of course Roots as well.
How exciting and how good is she going to be, this three-year-old filly from New Zealand, Prowess?
She will be very good, and I think that we will... Well, obviously, we won't see her now again for this prep. They're sending her straight back. I think she was on a flight Sunday morning, actually. They weren't wasting their time with her, and I think when you've got a horse that good, Roger James said, you know, you don't get them come around this often, so he's going to wrap her in cotton wool and take her home, and we'll see her back out here for the big spring features. But she is just that good. I thought that she would flatten off how many runs she's had this prep and having to travel, and I thought Pavitra would have her number, but she is a very, very good filly, and Poissier is doing so well at the moment, her sire as well. So it's great to have a good filly that we can all follow and get excited for the spring, because at the end of the day, that's what, you know, I think people want to see, and what gets people to the races, seeing these good horses and being able to follow them.
What did you take out of the Tancred, won by Arapaho?
What I took out of the Tancred is that Cleveland is going to be very, very hard to beat in the Sydney Cup. That was a huge run from him. A similar story, got really far back and was just winding up. So, I'm not sure what he's paying futures or early markets for the Sydney Cup, but I don't think they'll be able to beat him in that. I really don't. And particularly, I know it's raining. I'm in Randwick and it's raining here at the moment. So if we get a bit of rain in the next couple of weeks, as we often do at this time of year, I can't see him getting beaten by anything.
$4.50 favourite.
Okay, Cleveland. Well, there you go. Still getting $4.50 about it. I'd be backing him now.
What'd you make of Bandersnatch winning the Doncaster Prelude?
Well, I didn't think he'd run as well as he did. Certainly not. But it was a great run, and I think Michael Hawke said after it, you know, everyone gives Brenton a bit of stick sometimes for the way that he handles it, but it was a fantastic ride from Brenton, and I think a well-deserved win from Bandersnatch. He's always been near about, you know, he runs in those big races, and He ran it, I think, in the big dance last prep, and then the Hunter. So he's always thereabouts, running a Group 3, Group 2 company, and never quite gets there. But it was just his day. I probably I don't know how I'd feel about sticking with him for the Doncaster, but I thought it was a great run all the same.
What are we following? What are we sacking out of the weekend?
Okay, so I am following. Well, obviously, we have to follow a tissue. She was just enormous. You can't not follow her off that. I'm also going to follow Lord Ardmore, though. I don't think he could have run a much better race first up. He got well off the pace from a wide gate and then just worked home strongly on the outer and was the only horse of the day to break 33 seconds for the last 600. So we've got to follow Lord Ardmore, a tissue, and then Brutality, who just does what Brutality always does, storming home from the back. But I think it's the right setup going forward for him. I think he was the only horse on the day to break 11 seconds for his last 200. So we'll follow Brutality as well.
TJ Smith this week, Ali. Nature Strip, going for four in a row. I mean, we saw one of his, as Darren Flindell called it, one of the great moments at Randwick when Chautauqua did it. Imagine if Nature Strip was able to pull it off this week.
Well, I'd love him to. And like I said, I think, you know, for racing, and we talk about trying to get particularly young people back in racing and coming out to see horses. These are the horses they come to see when they get those cult followings, and they want to come and see Nate the Strip in the stalls and say hello and see him win, you know. So we want to see these good horses win, don't we? So I would love to see him back in good order. And I was chatting to Stu, his strapper at the barriers on Saturday, because Stu's a barrier attendant too, and he just said he just loves Sydney. Melbourne doesn't agree with him that much, and he just thrives when he's here. And since he's come back from his trip down south, he has just taken everything in his stride. James said he felt better than ever in his track gallop earlier in the week. So, you know, I'd love to see him win, but I think Giga Kick's going to be really hard to beat.
It's going to be a great week. Looking forward to it, and looking forward to getting your mail on Friday as well, Ali.
Thanks, guys. Can't wait.